a couple of things before we get started today. First of all, during the recording of this, between my Skype and my recorder having issues and my family being up and around, there's some odd glitches and some extra sounds in the background. You can make it out for the most part. There's just a few parts that's a little off. I hope you guys can bear through that. I apologize in advance. I'm going to try to work better on that in the future, but I edited it down the best I can, so this is what I've got. Enjoy. And then for my second of all, I've got a little announcement to play. This is from the DC TV Podcasting Network. They've got shows covering the TV shows Supergirl, Arrow, Flash, Gotham, and Legends of Tomorrow, along with another podcast that looks at the DC movies. They're teaming up with the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation to help cure spinal cord ailments, and they're doing a live podcast marathon on Saturday, June the 11th of 2016. I'm going to go ahead and play the little clip they have for us to play, but I will say go ahead and check out their spot, check out their website. I'll have links on the show notes for all this. Go ahead and check them out. Like I say, it's for a good cause, and it's a great set of podcasts. So I'm going to go ahead and play their podcast, a little promotion information on it. And then after that, we'll get started with our show. Thanks, guys.
My name is Rebecca Johnson.
And I'm Carly Lane.
And we are two of the hosts of Supergirl Radio, a podcast dedicated to the CW's Supergirl series and the character of Kara Zor-El.
We wanted to let you know about the DC TV podcast fundraiser benefiting the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation.
All of the shows in the DC TV podcast network will be broadcasting live on June 11th, 2016, starting at 2 p.m. Eastern.
We'll have discussions about Arrow, The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Gotham, and of course, Supergirl.
While also raising money to support the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation spinal cord and epidural stimulation research.
If you donate, you'll automatically be entered into a raffle to win autographs and comics.
To find out more information about our event, head over to dctvpodcast.com/fundraiser to find out how to donate and where to listen.
Joe, the Real American Headcast, is the code name for Aaron's daring, highly trained headcast. Its purpose? To podcast about G.I. Joe, Fighting Cobra, a ruthless terrorist organization determined to rule the world.
And welcome back to another wonderful episode of G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast. This is episode 10. This month we're going to cover the 10th issue of G.I. Joe. But before we get started, once again, I would like to welcome back my regular co-host, Ryan Daly. Hey there, Ryan.
Hey, what's going on?
And today joining us, due to scheduling, the holiday and everything, both Adam and Kyle is not able to join us, so I brought in a special guest star. Today we have Kevin. Kevin, are you there?
Yeah, how are you? Good to be on your show. I'm a big fan.
Well, thank you. Glad to have you on. Glad to talk with another G.I. Joe fan. Speaking of which, why did I ask you on today? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name's Kevin. Been big G.I. Joe fan since day one. I remember getting the first issue off of a spindle rack at a 7-Eleven in Southern California where I grew up. Started collecting the comics. Missed issue two. Wasn't able to get that till later in back issues. And then, of course, I got all of the toys at the time and watched the cartoon. And it's always been a one of the passionate fandoms of mine. And I currently co-host a couple of podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. One of them is the Culture Clash, our biweekly show on, geeky and nerdy news. And once a month, we do a show called Fandom Flashback, where we look back on a property of that we're all fans of. And our first one was of G.I. Joe. So you guys got to check that out. We had Aaron there on as a guest talking about his podcast. And we just recently wrapped up a Fandom Flashback, several episodes of Highlander. And we've also just announced that we're going to be doing a Highlander a dedicated show called Blood of Kings. I'm also part of the Georgia Southern Command G.I. Joe costuming group, which you learn a little bit more about in that G.I. Joe fandom flashback as well. So it's as I said, I'm a big G.I. Joe fan. I love your show. I love the comics. Just a quick story. I recently got back from California. My dad's garage had a fire last summer, and I had thought that all of my original G.I. Joes had gotten burned and destroyed. But luckily, they survived in the comic box, and they were all sleeved. There was just a little bit of soot damage on the top of the comic bag. So I went back and rebagged all of them, and thankfully, all of them are intact, including my number one signed by Stan Lee.
Right on. That's good.
Yeah.
Very lucky. Sorry about the fire, but yeah, that's great that you managed to salvage that stuff.
Yeah, a lot of my G.I. Joes had some soot damage on them, and I've tried to clean them as best as I can, but some of them I just can't clean as well as I wanted. My original Shipwreck figure was in pretty bad shape, and so was my Major Blood. So I'm working on a new Major Blood costume, so I thought I had to order a new one off eBay to make sure I get the details down. But I'm just the comics were what I was mostly worried about, and I'm glad they survived.
Glad to hear that. And for those that follow us on the Facebook page, you may have seen Kevin on there. I posted some of his pictures. I'm just looking here. It looks like it was back April 1st. Kevin's a part of a cosplay G.I. Joe cosplay group, and I posted some of their pictures on there back on April 1st, and then I posted some pictures of him dressed as Shipwreck earlier than that. So
yeah, we got together. It's become a yearly event now down in Charleston, South Carolina. We get on the USS Yorktown, which is now a floating museum. It is a gigantic aircraft carrier that was from World War II, served in several theaters of war, including Korea and Vietnam. And we are invited down there to dress up as G.I. Joe characters, and we take some really cool pictures and, get some of the fans and take pictures with them as well. So we had about 30 of us all dressed up as G.I. Joe characters. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, looks like it. And speaking of G.I. Joe stories, I've got a couple I want to share with you guys real quick. Yesterday, I was watching the G.I. Joe Retaliation was on. In fact, it was on today also, it looks like. But I was watching it, and my daughter comes in, and I'm like, what are you watching, Daddy? I'm like, it's G.I. Joe Retaliation. And I was telling her, well, that's, Roadblock and Flint and Lady J. And she looks at TV. Lady J's supposed to have red hair. Man, I hate when they can't get their characters right. It's my daughter. And then a little later, they showed Snake. And I'm like, there's Snake Eyes. She goes, at least they got him right.
I have a short story related with G.I. Joe that happened to me today as well. My daughter knows that I'm a big G.I. Joe fan, and she noticed on one of the channels that they are replaying the old G.I. Joe original cartoon. And without telling me, she recorded, set the DVR to record several episodes, and she was watching the episode called Gray Hairs and Growing Pains, where Serpentor and Dr. Mindbender gas some of the G.I. Joes, and some of the G.I. Joes turn to 7-year-olds while some of them age increasingly.
Right.
And she liked it so much she wanted to watch it with me, so we did that today.
Right on. Yeah, we record it's on 90 Cub or something like that around here. And yeah, I've got a set of records on my DVR for my daughter. She likes it.
Yeah.
And then my second story real quick, I was in the bathroom this morning, and bathroom next, and I could hear my daughter in there singing.
G.I. Joe, a real American hero. Like, that's my girl.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that's why she's my favorite kid.
Oh. Parenting done right, my friend.
There you go. All right, well, unless you guys have anything else, let's go and get started with the actual episode proper. Today, we're going to cover issue 10. The cover date on that was April of 1983. But to buy that fresh off the newsstand, you had to have 60 cents and be around on January the 11th of 1983. The editor on this, as usual, was Dennis J. O'Neill. The title of this story was called A Nice Little Town Like Ours. Writer, welcome back, Mr. Larry Hama. The penciler, Mike Vosburg. Inker, Chick Stone. Letterer, Joseph Rosen. Colorist, Christy Scheel. The cover credits was penciled by Mike Vosburg and inked by Chick Stone. And this was reprinted in G.I. Joe Comics Magazine 4, Tales of G.I. Joe number 10, and G.I. Joe Volume 1 trade paperback. And once again, I have all three of those plus the actual issue. I need to find another way to get it. Oh. So the synopsis on this story is, once again, we start out with the Joes on a mission. They are verifying and neutralizing a suspected Cobra stronghold in Midtown Manhattan. Scarlet, Zap, and Snake Eyes are on the roof securing exits and preventing any escapes that way. The primary assault team is Hawk, Clutch, Short Fuse, and Rock and Roll, who plan on attacking head-on. Breaker, Grunt, and Stalker are coming up via the sewers. Meanwhile, the Baroness discovers the assault is underway and opens the roof, capturing Zap, Scarlet, and Snakes. As other teams rush in, the Baroness prepares for separation, and they take off as an aircraft rises from the top of the building and flies off the three Joes captive, which the Baroness gasses into unconsciousness. Scarlet and Zap awake in a cell with some teenager undergoing a major trick. Meanwhile, Dr. Venom has Snake Eyes hooked up to a brain scanner. Venom is attempting to read Snake Eyes' mind to find the G.I. Joe base. While Snake Eyes uses his ninja powers to thwart the brainwave scanner, the young man with the other Joes uses a light bulb to purify the water, which Cobra is using to drug the Joes. Once off the sauce, the Joes are able to escape their cell and disguise as Cobras and head to the local arcade where Dr. Venom has Snake Eyes. Using his Jedi training,
fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. I sense much fear in you.
I'm sorry, his ninja training, Snake Eyes is dredging up the tragedies of his past to continue thwarting the brain scanner. Inside the arcade, the Joes are attacked by the Cobra teens. Venom heads up to investigate, missing the part of Snake Eyes' past where he learns to control his breathing and slow his heart rate to appear dead. Thinking that the Cobra youth could handle the two Joes, Venom returns to find his prisoner dead. As he pulls his corpse from the machine, Snake Eyes awakens and takes out Dr. Venom and the guard. Rejoining his friends, the quartet makes for the airport. The Joes get back to the craft from earlier and head home. The young man says he plans on staying behind to fight the good fight and tries to rescue his family. As they head back, the pilot pulls a gun out, causing Snake Eyes to blow him away with his Uzi. Also the compass and navigation gear while he's at. Not knowing where they are at or where they are going, the Joes fly out of a storm they're in, and eventually they parachute out with Scarlet landing on the Incredible Hulk. Finding themselves at the opening of a mall, they end up boarding a bus back to Staten Island, with the bus driver telling them, hey, no weirdos on my bus. The end. So there's our 10th issue, and since you're the guest this time, Kevin, why don't you go ahead and give us your thoughts and your feelings on this issue.
This issue, I really like this issue because looking back on it, this is where things really started to get into high gear when it came into really good G.I. Joe storytelling. Obviously, we've got Dr. Ven here. He is one of my favorite villains in the G.I. Joe stories and comics here. We get a lot more of him later coming up, which is which I'll get into later, which is one of my favorite story arcs. And we also get Springfield, a little history behind Springfield, which we will see a lot more of later on, and how big the Cobra coils reach out there, so to speak. And I like the end, a little play on the Marvel, and you know, landing on a convention there with the Hulk. Learn a little bit more about the team. And of course, Snake Eyes' training, which we get into a lot more later as well. But to me, this is where things got rolling for me. This is when I really started getting into G.I. Joe. I love several of the earlier issues, of course, but this is when it starts rolling for me.
Yeah, that's what me and Kyle and Ryan and Adam was saying the last couple of months. That issue 10 is where it really starts to – you start getting more backstory, more ongoing themes. And again, yeah, Springfield starts the whole thing rolling, I think.
Yeah, definitely. You see how big Cobra is too, and how organized they are. Being able to take over a whole town and use it as a front, and seeing a little bit of the resistance with the young teenager as well. I love the art as well. It's nice to see Larry Hama back where he belongs. I just especially the little sneak into Snake Eyes' background. I love it.
And Kyle. I'm sorry, I keep saying Kyle. Try that again. Ryan, what do you think about this issue?
Like you guys both said, this is a very important issue. I'm not convinced it's a good story, but it is important because it's a world-building issue. Like you guys said, we get introduced to so much here. This is, like, for the first time, Springfield was mentioned back in issue 5, but every state has a Springfield. It's kind of an inside joke, or it will become an inside joke, that it's such a ubiquitous town name that it could be anywhere, and that's how Cobra stays so hidden for so long. But we get the first appearance of, like, really what life is like in Springfield. And not only that, but we get the history, and Billy lays it out for us how Cobra inserted itself in this town and took over this town through this sort of corporate pyramid scheme structure and kind of developed this cult-like mentality that just slowly but steadily brainwashed the citizens into kind of accepting this worldview of what Cobra wanted them to believe. And now it's like, yeah, they're almost kind of like zombified robots that just kind of, they're brainwashed and they believe this stuff. It's scary, but it's kind of cool too. And the threat that it poses, because we're not just talking about like trained soldiers who could be threatening. We're talking about like little kids who just like point at the strangers on the street and recognize the danger. So that is great. We get the first appearance of Billy, who will become a major character later on. We get the first appearance of Dr. Venom, who becomes a major character in the next kind of arc. I've sort of said it before that I think this is kind of the end of season one for G.I. Joe, because we get the new characters who were introduced in 1983, the second wave of the figures, start showing up in issue 11, the next issue after this. And issues like 12 through 19 are kind of this big overarching continuous story. The first time we've really gotten something that long and drawn out. This is kind of like a prologue to that story by introducing Dr. Venom, by introducing elements of Snake Eyes' past. That's one of the bigger things, is we learn so much about Snake Eyes' past. We learn about, we get an inkling of his ninja training. We learn that he was disfigured and injured in some helicopter crash in the desert. We learn that his family was killed in a car accident. These are major things that will define this character that up until now we haven't gotten. So, yeah, it's a memorable issue. It is a return. I mean, after Larry Hama had been gone for 2 months, he comes back with a bang. But the story itself, it's okay. The issue is more important than it is good. But, yeah.
See, I'm in the middle ground there. I think, yes, the story, as you said, sets up a whole so much that's to come to play on later. But I think I like the actual story a little better than you, except for the few things I want to point out here. For one, is this supposed to be Billy? I keep thinking it's Billy myself, but he talks about his family still being there and they're hiding underground working against Cobra.
Is he actually named Billy in here?
I don't think they ever referred to him by name. They keep referring to him as Kid. But like Ryan, I keep wanting to call him Billy, but as I read the story,
I think later on, when Billy comes back, like 10 or 12 issues from now, or maybe later than that, I don't remember. I think they mentioned that it's the same kid. So they do a bit of a, Larry does a bit of a retcon of him.
Okay, because for some reason I keep on referring to him as Billy also. And then I get to the end of the story where he says his family's still here, you know, working underground against Cobra. I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe this isn't Billy then.
Actually, I don't even
know how that plays out. Keep Cobra Commander's son under having him raise their children in a town that's controlled by Cobras.
Yeah. And then, like I said, I do like you're saying, they set up things, you know, with Snake Eyes past, which we're not going to, they're not really going to touch upon again for another, what, 16 issues. So, I mean, because we don't get that until issues 26 and 27, we really delve into his background. So I like the way that Larry's setting this all up, what, a year and a half before he actually gets to that story. Like you see, he touches on, you know, his family dying, some of his ninja training. It's really good setting up. A couple problems I had with the story, for one, and it's just a minor quibble, the Baroness... Didn't she have a Cobra insignia on her the front of her suit before this? Is this the first time she doesn't have the Cobra insignia on there, or am I forgetting?
Yeah, she doesn't. Yeah, she doesn't have it in this issue, unless she's going a little Cobra casual. She's formal enough to remind the Cobra officer to don't forget the salutation before you speak to her.
There are a lot of inconsistencies in the art in this issue. And I think I said it last month because last episode or issue 9, I think, was Mike Vosburgh's first issue.
Right.
And he happens to be the penciler on my favorite run of the series, which is, you know, the next, you know, 10 or 12 issues that I love so much. But he's not the greatest G.I. Joe artist. And even at this point, like just his second issue, a lot of characters are off model, especially in the beginning when we get the G.I. Joes. Grunt is name dropped as supposed to be one of the team that's in the sewer, but he's drawn like Flash or Grand Slam. There's a moment when the Joes are getting out of the truck and you can't tell who is who because Clutch and Hawk look pretty much exactly the same as each other. And like the Cobra Troopers, like everybody looks a little bit off model. It's just, it's not great art throughout. It's not horrible, but there are some problems with it.
Well, the drawing, the artwork itself is fine overall. It's just, yeah, there's the inconsistencies. And I'm glad you mentioned the sewer scene, because I wrote down who they mentioned, but I remember I was making my notes on you. I had to go back a couple of times. He said, yes, Breaker, Stalker, and Grunt. Well, there's, you know, wait a minute. That looks like Zap or Flash. That doesn't look like, what the heck? Okay, well, let me write down what they have here. But and then on that same scene where Baroness, you know, tells him, you know, don't forget the salutation. I'm not quite sure what that, is that an opening on his chest or is that a golden circle? And that Cobra in the background.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what that logo was there. Maybe he's a trainee and he hasn't earned his Cobra stripes yet.
Well, that's why I thought third night.
That would be a good no prize. That would be a good no prize explanation for that.
Better than mine. I thought maybe he stole one of Power Girl's costumes and it was a boob window.
I'm looking at my original issue that I bought back in the day that survived my dad's garage fire, and I, you know, it's a little washed out, but yeah, it's just a circle there on his chest.
But and then another, I guess, question I have is, I know that if you boil water, can purify it and get rid of, you know, all that junk in it. I don't know if a light bulb gets hot enough to purify water. Am I wrong on that? Or am I?
It depends on the light bulb. It has to be one hot ass light bulb. But
well, I know they're visioning it's the sun. They're thinking it's the sun.
Well, reading this as a 12-year-old in 1983, I bought it.
So I didn't get this a little later. So I read this. I was probably like 16 when I first read this issue, and I don't recall offhand, but yeah, reading it now as a 46-year-old, I'm like, wait a minute, what? No, it doesn't work that way.
I think that the best thing that stands out about this issue. And you guys make good points about the story, especially you, Ryan, about, you know, that the story isn't that great, but for what it presents now, for what we're going to see in the future, it's a really important issue, is that Snake Eyes' past and Dr. Venom, because later on, these guys have a little adventure together. Yeah. So, which is one of my favorite arcs that's coming up.
Oh yeah,
and Dr. Venom, because of that arc, it remains one of my favorite villains, Cobra villains of all time. And of course, the Larry Hama, he's laying the seeds for what he's eventually going to tell us about Snake Eyes, which has been brewing in his mind all this time.
Yeah,
I agree. Dr. Venom is also one of my favorite villains, just because of the part that he played in the issues that will come up in the next year. I also, even though I was complaining about the art, I like the way Vosburgh designed him. I don't know if he was intentionally supposed to look like Peter Cushing, but I see a little bit of that and a little bit of like a Vincent Price without the facial hair. He looks like a kind of classical mad scientist from like a Hammer horror movie. So
yeah, that's a good description. I like that.
Yeah, I was trying to place, but that's exactly what it is. Peter Cushing mixed with a little Vincent Price. That's why I have you on the show, Ryan. You have these great observations.
I thought it was my looks, but okay, good to know.
Well, you know. Well, you are the better looking of the two, so you know. Not a mean use. What the heck? But I also like how they keep Snake Eye's face in the shadows, so you can't quite see what's wrong with them. But yeah, other than that, like I said, I enjoy this story. I enjoy, you know, what it sets up. Like I said, I think I like the story a little bit better than what you guys did overall. But again, a couple minor quibbles. Also, near the end, when I mentioned Snake Eyes, a trained soldier, a trained ninja, and to take this one guy out, he lets loose his Uzi in the cabin. I thought that was a little weak, I guess. It seems like, you know, a ninja soldier guy could take him out without destroying everything in sight. I know they need to for the story, but so I'm like, come on, Snake Eyes. Yeah, I'm not a soldier. I could have, you know, done better than that, I think.
One of the panels that stood out that I really enjoyed was the arcade scene, because back in that day, that was the place to be, was in these stand-up arcades. Yeah. We never had the large shooting laser cannon type of arcade game, but I would have loved to. But this is where I hung out for several years, and it was, and you know, walking into one that's all a bunch of kids that are Cobra trainees has got to be a scary thing. But I, you know, walking into a arcade back in those days, there was cliques, you know, like that. You had different, you know, you had the kids over there playing. You had the pinball crowd, and then you had the video game crowd, you know. But I really enjoyed that scene. I enjoyed that a lot.
Our local arcade didn't have the giant laser cannon either. I'm looking at that page right now. I'm just trying to figure out, is that holograms he's shooting on the wall or the ceiling?
Yeah, I think that's what it's supposed to be, is some type of early hologram thing.
And then it switches from light, whatever, to actual laser. Because I'm assuming he's not blowing a hole in the wall.
Right, right.
But and like I said, like you mentioned, I like the call at the very end, the Marvel signing there, and I thought that was a nice little touch, showing that it's not in the Marvel universe, it does recognize the Marvel group. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, I like it when Scarlet lands on the Hulk.
Yeah. Yeah, as Shag says, she is hot. So, you know, I don't think he minds Scarlet landing on him.
And the bus driver, when the bus driver says, "Hey, no weirdos on my bus," he is referring to Snake Eyes, not the rest of the crew, right?
I'm sure.
Well, hope so, because Zap is like one of the few Hispanic or Latino characters. And if he's calling him a weirdo, that's just racist.
Yeah.
Early 80s. Manhattan, I don't know.
Actually, I did want to talk about Zap, because he's, you know, this is like the last issue of the original team, of the original wave, because as I've said two or three times already, you know, the next issue, issue 11, starts introducing new characters from the 1983 line. And half of the original cast kind of gets forgotten after this point to a large degree. You know, Hawk, Snake Eyes, Scarlet, Stalker, Clutch, and rock and roll. Those six kind of got regular use throughout the series, throughout the history of the comics and the toy line and stuff, and they were always kind of there. The other seven mostly get forgotten. And for some reason, of those other seven, I really liked Zap, and I wanted them to do more with him. But this is kind of the last time we see him do anything really kind of substantive or interesting. And yet, I mean, he's also, the character could have been replaced by almost anybody in this one, but it was nice that we got to see him do something and be part of this story that is a historic and important story.
Yes, very much so. I agree with you 100% on that.
Yeah, good point. Do you guys have an idea why they kind of started to retire some of these characters and highlight new ones?
My guess, again, just guessing, I would guess is the amount of characters they've got, and Hasbro wants to focus on the new toys that they're selling, and they're not going to make any money on these old characters, so they want Larry to focus more on the new characters that they got. So I don't know if Ryan, if you've got any other suggestions or if you've heard anything else.
As I understood it, the deal between Marvel and Hasbro as they were being licensed, whether this was in written contract or if it was just understood, was that the book existed to promote the toy line in some fashion or another. But Larry was given a lot of leeway in how he did that. So he introduced all of the new toys, the vehicles, the figures, and everything in the comic. But as we'll see when we go through, some of them only appear once, so they didn't necessarily hijack the narrative. He was really deft at bringing in these new things, but he had to sacrifice some of the old. But I think what he was able to do was maintain a core cast that could be the through line, that could carry us all the way from issue 1, issue 155, and beyond. And we saw that cast, as established, was really Hawk, Snake Eyes, Scarlet, and Stalker, and then a few other characters kind of floating around them that would be recurring faces. And the toys also repurposed those characters too, whether it was as a result of the comic or it was just their intention to do so anyway, because they could use the same mold and it was cheaper. So some of those characters got continuous use and got kind of revamped, and it did establish a nice little continuity for the book. So even if the next issue introduces six new Joes, we're not losing everybody that we remember.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. I mean, I agree with you on that. That's what it sounds like to me too. Like you, yeah, Larry, he was a master at, you know, as you said, interweaving what he needed to add in to make Hasbro happy, but yet keep the comics, so it wasn't. For the most part, unless I'm missing or forgetting something, because it's been a while since I read these, for the most part, it wasn't like he didn't really force it in where it seemed odd. Most of the time when he snuck one of these in, or the, you know, new characters, the new voice, it made sense to the story for the most part, unless I'm misremembering. Do you guys have any other thoughts on issue 10 at this point? Kevin?
Yeah, I just want to say, that I like the idea of Cobra having a stronghold, in, you know, downtown New York, and you kind of see them setting up roots and seeing how big they really are, and it's also fun to see that later on in future issues. And again, my highlight is Dr. Venom and the sneak peek behind Snake Eyes.
I almost forgot earlier when you guys talked about Dr. Venom. I do like Dr. Venom. I like Dr. Mindbender when he shows up down the road, spoiler alert. Though I do think Dr. Venom is more of a realistic looking mad scientist than what we get when we get Mr. Dr. Mindbender with his, you know, shirtless, monocle wearing.
I will agree with that.
Don't get me wrong, I like Dr. Mindbender, but yeah, Dr. Venom was more, and I hate using the term realistic when I'm talking about comics, but he was more realistic than Mindbender's one.
A little less cartoony, too.
Yes. There you go. That's what I'm looking for. That's cartoony.
I think you guys are so wrong. When I first saw Dr. Venom, I was like, you know what would make this character even better? Take off his shirt, give him a purple cape, a village people mustache, and a monocle. That would really make this character something special.
I sense sarcasm.
Either that or Brian's letting us know a little more something about him than he wants to know.
No, yeah, like I said, I love the issue. I like almost all of the things that this issue introduces. The only thing about it that I don't really like is the brainwave scanner. I like how it's used in this story because it's a tool that we use to flesh out Snake Eyes' background or just tease it. We get these glimpses. It's fine, but later on in future issues, and it's not right away, but way down the line, like years from now, we're going to see the brainwave scanner used in ways that I don't really like and then overused.
Yeah.
And I'll have more complaints when we get to those.
I did want to make one note of the cover. One of the things I've always loved about the G.I. Joe comics was the covers. They've had some very classic, well-done covers. And this is one of those covers that I'm drawn to. When you see a nice little town and you see these cobras hiding behind a facade of some sort, and you see Snake Eyes and Scarlet approaching. I love the cover. I think it's great. The only issue I have with it is the little tiny grenade that that Scarlet has that she wears on her left chest. Looks more like a chess piece. other than that, the cover is fantastic.
Yeah, I forgot to mention the cover. Yeah, like you, this is probably one of my favorite covers of the series. The sign, Welcome to Springfield, a nice little town. And you get Scarlet, who's a little too happy, but her Snake Eyes running up on that facade, the cover troopers hiding behind it. I really like that. And it sets up the story to me, you know, what we're going to be seeing and what's to come. What do you think about the cover, Ryan?
Same things you said. I really like the cover. I love the whole idea behind it with the facade of the house. It gives you this perfect little encapsulation. This is a cover that tells a story, which is sometimes the best kind of cover. But I also agree, the one thing that kind of bothers me about it is Scarlet's smile. She looks nice. I don't think she should be smiling in the cover. I wish she wasn't.
She's just very confident.
And now that Kevin has pointed out, like, the rook or the chess piece that's on her chest or something, I can't unsee that. And I just,
it's an enjoyable cover. I say it's one of my favorites. Oh, the brainwave scanner. I like the brainwave scanner. My only problem with it, again, like Ryan was saying, further down the line, it gets a bit overused. But yeah, I like how it's introduced, and I like it the first few times we see it. It's eventually, you become the fallback crutch to over it.
I kind of get the feeling the brainwave scanner was more important to the story to get behind Snake Eyes and his past, not for the evil deeds that Dr. Venom was his intention for it.
Oh yeah, most definitely. It's just if there is a device, I think you set up the future stories we're going to see, like say in about a year and a half. We'll get more about Snake Eyes. It's like a little peek into Snake Eyes' past. And it's also there for bottom page 16 or 17 when Snake Eyes is telling us, you know, he's having that flashback to someone teaching the way to enter Anvil and how you can steal your breath and heartbeat to appear like you're dead. And kind of helping set that up, what he's going to be doing on the next couple pages. But then, I thoroughly enjoyed the story. As we've talked about the last couple issues, this is the beginning of greatness, as far as I'm concerned. I liked the earlier issues for the most part, but yeah, this is where it starts out and it starts. Yeah, you get more of the background, more of the subplot going through the stories, less one and done. But yeah, unless you guys, do you have any other thoughts on this, Ryan?
No, I think we've said all.
Okay, well. Let's go ahead and we'll take a break. Let's listen to some promos from some friends of the show. And we'll be right back to talk about the cartoon.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
Everyone, my name is Kevin of the Fandom Podcast Network. Please join me and my fellow co-host and co-founders, Kyle and Norman, as we bring great podcast programming to you. We have awesome shows like Culture Clash, hosted by Kyle and me, where we talk about all of the geeky and nerdy news, including regular Star Wars updates. We also have the Fandom Flashback shows, where we look back fondly on pop culture fandoms that are near and dear to our hearts, including recently our G.I. Joe Fandom Flashback and our Highlander Fandom Flashback episodes, which include celebrity interviews. We're also proud to announce our new podcast dedicated to Highlander that Norman and I host called Blood of Kings, a Highlander Podcast. You can find these great shows on Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podbean, on Facebook under Fandom Podcast Network, and you can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com and find us on Twitter at FanPodNetwork.
Do you want to hear the origin of Superman or Batman? Of course not. You're listening to a Geek Culture podcast. You know the origins of Superman and Batman. You've always known them. Your unborn grandchildren know the origins of Superman and Batman. But what about Guy Gardner, Blue Beetle, or the Phantom Stranger? What about Firestorm, Sandman, or the Golden Age Fury? Those are just a few of the stories covered in the Secret Origins podcast, a review show dedicated to the Secret Origins comic published by DC in the 1980s. Each episode of the Secret Origins podcast features me, Ryan Daly, and an all-star collection of guest hosts revealing or revisiting the legends of the DC superheroes and villains. And if you're already sick of hearing my voice on this promo, the good news is at least 50% of the talking on the Secret Origins podcast is done by a terrific guest from the podcast and blogging community. So check out the Secret Origins podcast, available on iTunes and at secretoriginspodcast.wordpress.com.
And welcome back. Hope you guys enjoyed those podcast promos. We're back. We're going to talk about the next episode of G.I. Joe the Cartoon.
Yo, Joe!
He'll fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. G.I. Joe is there.
G.I. Joe is the code name for America's daring, highly trained special mission force. Its purpose? To defend human freedom against Cobra, a ruthless terrorist organization determined to rule the world.
He never gives up. He'll stay till the fight's won. G.I. Joe will dare. G.I. Joe.
And, Mr. Ryan Daly, do you have the synopsis for us?
I do. The Revenge of Cobra Part 3, The Palace of Doom, originally aired on Wednesday, 12th, 1984 at 3 p.m. This episode picks up where Part 2 left off, with Mutt suffocating in a sandstorm. Shipwreck attaches a rope to the broken mast of their sand sled and gives the other end of the rope to Flint, who ties it around his waist. Flint jumps overboard and wades through the sand until he rescues Mutt. The two make it back to Shipwreck and get under the sails to wait out the storm. Once it passes, Shipwreck ignites the thrusters and the Joes race off across the desert. At the Cobra Temple, Cobra Commander plays the part of Basil Exposition, reminding us that the three component parts of the Weather Dominator have separated and landed in three remote parts of the world. The Commander tasks Zartan and the Baroness with mobilizing a force to retrieve the Ion Correlator from the Island of No Return. G.I. Joe, however, has alt-teamed the island, and the Joes and Cobras engage in a fierce air and naval battle, with the Joe Air Forces led by Wild Bill and the naval forces led by Torpedo and Cutter. Back at the temple, Cobra Commander dispatches Major Blood to retrieve the second Weather Dominator fragment, the Hydromaster, from the Palace of Doom. At G.I. Joe headquarters, Scarlet preps a Joe strike team for their own mission to the Palace of Doom when Flint, Mutton, Junkyard, and Shipwreck return. Flint introduces the rest of the Joes to Shipwreck, vouching for his character, and Shipwreck responds by flirting with Lady J right in front of Flint. Later, Flint and Lady J lead the Joe mission to the Palace of Doom, and Shipwreck joins the team, because in a children's cartoon, anyone can join an elite special forces group regardless of background checks or qualifications. Elsewhere, Roadblock, who has been on his own since escaping from the Pit of Chaos, watches a convoy of trucks. When a pair of mountain lions attack, he jumps onto one of the trucks and sneaks into the back. He's surprised to find not only food and supplies in the back of the truck, but a young cowgirl named Honda Lou West, tied up. Honda Lou claims to be the owner of the trucks and says Cobra hijacked them and threw her in the back. When Roadblock unties her, she says they can work together. Meanwhile, Joe and Cobra forces continue to battle at the Island of No Return. Some of the Joes, including Clutch, Rock and Roll, and Spirit, land on the reef surrounding the island. But then a Cobra party lands. Firefly plants a bomb that explodes part of the reef, creating a channel directly to the island. But as Joe and Cobra ships race to the channel, the freaky weather creates an enormous whirlpool that pulls all the ships into its vortex. Across the world, Major Blood leads his forces through the jungle to the Palace of Doom. The Joes arrive at the same time and split their forces to flank Major Blood. While both sides fire on each other and utilize robotic drones to try to get the upper hand, Lady J leads Shipwreck and Gung-Ho into the palace ahead of the Cobras. Back at the Island of No Return, Torpedo fires torpedoes into the heart of the whirlpool. The resulting explosion hurls Cutter's Whale and Baroness's ship onto the reef, effectively stranding both of them away from the island. Spirit volunteers to go to the island by himself and get the piece, and reluctantly, Cutter okays the mission. Meanwhile, Baroness calls Zartan for help, but he doesn't answer. Zartan and the Dreadnoks are in a submarine watching the battle unfold, but Zartan says he won't take part in it until it suits his purposes. Spirit gets to the Ion Correlator, but is attacked by Storm Shadow. The two warriors seem evenly matched, and their fight takes them and the Weather Dominator fragment over a waterfall. Back at the Palace of Doom, the Joes recover the Hydromaster, but they trip a booby trap that awakens a colossal stone statue. The statue chases them through the temple, threatening to crush them. Oh yeah, it can also breathe fire. But Cobra brought its own giant to the party, a lumbering robot that looks vaguely like a Transformer from the Pretenders line circa 1988. Outside the palace, Tripwire tells Flint that a massive earthquake is about to shake the whole region. The Joes escape from the temple as the Cobra robot and the stone giant battle each other. The earthquake rips up the ground, forcing a canyon between Lady J's group and the others, and causing her to drop the Hydromaster into the waiting hands of Major Blood, who flies off with the piece. As the Joes attempt to cross the dangerous chasm, the warring giants destabilize the ground. The episode ends with Shipwreck and Gung-Ho falling into the chasm as Lady J can only look on in horror.
Very good. Thank you very much, Ryan. So, Kevin, again, since you're the guest, what are your thoughts on this episode of the cartoon?
I have to tell you, as you may already know, Shipwreck's one of my favorite characters, and I like seeing him. I loved your wrap up, Ryan, about how he can join the G.I. Joe team without any credentials or background check. And I just figured that, you know, his charisma alone was enough background check for them. So I was happy to see Shipwreck back in, or Shipwreck get in there again after being introduced in the last episode. I was having some flashbacks to Waterworld when it came to the Island of No Return, and of course Indiana Jones for the Palace of Doom. But one of the things that I liked about this particular episode is it reminded me how much one of my favorite G.I. Joe toys of all time, which was the Whale hovercraft. Mm-hmm. I remember this episode in this series specifically when I got that toy, and that toy is still probably my favorite G.I. Joe vehicle of all time.
Right on. Yeah, I like the Whale. That was a good toy. The last couple episodes, we've been talking about some of the good lines we had in these shows. To me, this episode, I like the line, "I got sand in my shoe." I got sand in my shoe. It struck me out.
What was the line that I think Flint said when Shipwreck got into the back seat or the back cockpit with Lady J, and he said, "Two's company, but three's a regiment." Is that what he said?
Yeah. But he prefaces it. He says, like the saying goes, "Two's company, but three's a regiment." It's like, I'm gonna call BS on you, Flint. I don't think that is a popular saying. Pretty sure you made that up.
That line sticks out to me because I love that scene too.
Hey Ryan, are you in a specialized highly organized government operation. Maybe it is a thing.
In my mind, I am, but okay, that's a good point. You know, characters, I like the comics, like him in the cartoon, and he's so different in the cartoon, but he's got my favorite one, which is Cutter Baby. I just got a mean idea. And I just love, like, the way he says that with his weird kind of surfer voice. Yeah, that's good.
You know, I like Cobra Commander in here. He sends, Zartan and Baroness to the Island of No Return. I just imagine his mental process before that is, he would not like this group. Zartan and Baroness is pissed. Hey, you guys, hit the Island of No Return. And also, I just have to comment that these pieces pick some wonderful places to land. Island of No Return, the Palace of Doom. Could you pick a worse sounding place to land?
Yeah, the other thing that was interesting when they were storming the Island of No Return is I got a flashback because one of the vehicles they show is the Windsurfer, and I remember that was a mail away. Exclusive. You send it. Okay. You would send the mail away windsurfing kit or whatever it was.
This is like I love these type of episodes when there's some sort of weird scavenger hunt where the Joes have to break up into these smaller units because you see different characters shine.
Oh yeah.
Like other than Duke or Flint, kind of get their thing. Like, you know, you've got whole battle at the Palace of Doom, but within this group, you know, with all of these extra characters like Blowtorch and Rip, like, firing in the background, we're going to focus on Lady J, Shipwreck, and Gung-Ho. And they have a great rapport. Like, the way those three bounce off each other is great as they're running into the temple. And back at the Island of No Return, you've got these little groups with, like, Cutter and Torpedo, and Spirit is going to go off and do his own thing, and we'll get a spotlight on Spirit for a little while. So, yeah, these type of little missions, like, accentuate my favorite characters, and that's why I think we've covered 8 episodes of the show now, and I think my episode we've been, it's action packed. It's just a ton of like little action beats, but they're act beats and they're revealing of characterization too. So yeah, I like it.
The thing that stood out for me too is these pieces that get separated that they have to search for. They land in the worst possible locations. But it makes for fun storytelling when, as you said, Ryan, when it comes to the scavenger hunt.
Boy, no, yeah, if it landed, you know, in a strip club and landed, you know, in their backyard, yeah, the story wouldn't be nowhere near as compelling as, you know, landing these other oddball places. Again, as I said before, I work in my real life, work for the IRS. I'm not, I don't do anything military or, you know, I'm not a specialist or anything like that. My question is, can metal detectors actually detect an earthquake? Trip Arteller's earthquake coming because his metal detector registered. Do they work that way? I'm not quite sure. Ryan?
It's like a Geiger counter, like a super, yeah, it's kids tune. It's
okay, the same. Don't look too closely at it, if you're saying.
The last episode, the mirrors. You remember that doc?
Yeah.
That the medic doc supposedly invented. So, yeah, you can't look too much at that.
Well, you're a scientist, you know how it works with these kind of things. You're master of one, you're master of all.
You mentioned that the whale was one of your favorite toys. As far as toys go, like, for the Cobras, I always loved the water moccasin that the Copperhead had, but I always wished that they would have made a toy of Baroness's ship that she has in this one.
Oh, the one with the Cobra yeah. On the top of the front of the ship. Yeah, that thing's great.
Yeah, I wish there was something like that. I liked way more like in design than like later on we would get the hydrofoil or whatever. And yeah, I like that one more. I wish they would have made a toy of that.
Yeah, I don't know how that would have worked if Larry would have came up with it, or the animators would have came up with a toy, or not a toy, but a vehicle. Hasbro wanted to use. I don't know if there was some sort of negotiation for that, or.
Well, I think that now that we brought this up, when you look at this episode, every single vehicle is one that you could buy or send in flag points for. So right. It's a big commercial for all of those toys, and mm-hmm. You know that is done by design. You hit on it earlier, Ryan, that a lot of the different characters got to be highlighted, which, you know, made them appealing when you saw them sitting on a peg at a Toys R Us or another toy store.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what the cartoon, the comic was for. They were to sell the toys. So yeah, that's definitely, much like Larry did with the comic, the show had to bring all these new figures and new action figures and vehicles into play and entice kids to talk mommy and daddy to spend their hard-earned money on all these, you know, G.I. Joe toys.
Yeah.
But yeah, another great episode. I enjoy it. It was action-packed. Again, like, you know, they got all these weird exotic places. They're kind of reminiscent of other, like the Palace Doom. Yeah, not much difference between a palace and a temple. So, I mean, I don't know. I can't remember offhand when Temple of Doom came out.
It was 2 years after this.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, it's very, you know, they get to go to some exotic places and, again, join the military and see the world.
One of the things that I like to keep, you know, just kind of a record of for my own weird OCD nature, I always kind of like to record like which figures or which characters are on which missions and where everybody is placed. On the Island of No Return mission for the Joes, we see Wild Bill, Torpedo, Cutter, Doc, Clutch, Rock and Roll, and Spirit. There might be other characters, but they're not like heavily featured. There are a bunch of kind of the regular green shirts that we see. Cobras at the Island of No Return, Baroness, Firefly, Storm Shadow, Zartan, Buzzer, Ripper, and Torch. The Joes at the Palace of Doom, we see Flint, Lady J, Shipwreck, Gung-Ho, Ricando, Ripcord, Blowtorch, Breaker, Stealer, Tripwire, and Mutt. And then just Major Blood is the only named Cobra at the Palace of Doom.
I think this series too is one of the reasons why I started to really like Major Blood as a villain too. He's always been one of my favorite Cobra villains. Mm-hmm. And this was one of the series that I remember seeing him in that I really liked.
There's a weird Major Blood moment in this when he's not even on screen. It's right after Cobra Commander sends Baroness and Zartan to the Island of No Return. He says, "Assemble your team." And we get this sequence of a bunch of airships and helicopters leaving the temple. And you hear in voiceover Major Blood screaming, "Cobra!" But then later on, he's like, "Yeah, Cobra Commander, he's sending him to a different mission." It's like, why was Major Blood screaming that at that moment? was that how he said goodbye? Or was he like, was he going to be on the mission? And he was like in the cockpit and he was like screaming that. And then they're like, "Oh yeah, wait, you're not going. You're too excited."
Well, he was definitely crucial to the Palace of Doom as he kind of coaxes the big creatures to attack the Joes.
Mm-hmm. Then I think Major Blood just likes screaming.
Oh, he loves it. He's proud to yell Cobra.
He's got the voice for it.
Very much so. He's funny. But, it's got a lot of similarities with the first, again, as we talked about, the first series, but they made it different enough that it keeps you involved, and again, it keeps the action packed. So, I enjoyed the animation for the most part. There's a few kinks here and there, but the voice acting, I think, through this entire thing is superb. I thoroughly enjoyed. Again, that these cartoons is what got me into the comics and the toys and everything. So, like I said, this is what got me going. So apparently, the cartoon did its job.
I did want to mention one of my other favorite scenes in this episode was when Spirit and Storm Shadow square off, and Storm Shadow throws a throwing star, and Spirit's bird catches it in its mouth. Before Spirit and Storm Shadow fight and then head over the waterfall. I just thought that was a great scene.
Oh, yeah, that's one thing we talked about before. Is that in the comics, it was Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow had a rivalry going. Where in the cartoon, they defocus on Snake Eyes and they give Spirit to be Storm Shadow's enemy for the most part of the scenes.
Yeah, it starts in this episode. It really picks up in the next one. And then it'll carry out occasionally throughout, like, the regular season.
Right.
But, I mean, they had different audiences. Like, their projected audience for the cartoon was much younger. You couldn't do a lot with a character whose face you couldn't see and who never spoke. So Snake Eyes wasn't a focal character. And this was one of the storylines where I think in the cartoon, Spirit ended up being my favorite Joe. It was pretty close between him and Gung Ho. And this was one of the episodes where I really, really liked Spirit.
It wasn't one of my favorites, but I did enjoy Spirit. I thought he was a good character. And again, I think he got a lot more, if I remember right, he seemed to get a lot more play in the cartoon than he did in the comics.
He did, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and then, of course, in the next, the Pyramid of Darkness, we see another Joe square off with Storm Shadow, and that's Quick Kick.
Yes, old Quick Kick. Well, Kevin, do you have any thoughts on this episode?
No, I think we summed it up here. It's just that, like Ryan said, it's action packed. A lot of the Joes get a chance to kind of shine and do their thing, and it's also a gigantic commercial for all the awesome toys that are out there.
Yeah, and Mr. Daly, do you have any other thoughts or anything you want to share on this episode?
No, I think we hit them all. Like I said, I think of the 8 episodes that we've covered so far, I think this one is my favorite. It doesn't have as many great dialogue lines, but the action is really cool, and we see a lot of my favorite characters doing cool things. So it's such a fun episode.
Oh, very much so. Yes, I agree. All right. Well, unless you guys have any other thoughts, let's go ahead and take another old break. Let the listeners get a drink of water or whatever. We'll do the same, and we'll be right back with you.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
Hello, everyone. My name is Pat, and I'm the host of a new podcast called The Long Box Crusade. A while back, my wife said to me, "Why do you keep buying more comics? I bet you have not even read all the comics you have already." Well, she's right, but let's keep that between you and me. So I took her up on the challenge to read them all. I decided to read my collection of comic books in chronological order by the issue's cover dates. I wanted to relive their adventures and bring back the memories I had of my childhood in the late 70s, 80s, 90s, and beyond. My collection has been stashed away in over 20 plus long boxes in the basement. I'll leave it up to your imagination as to why I cannot have them on display upstairs, but that's a different story. The Long Box Crusade podcast will be of recaps and reviews of the issues in my collection in a fun and friendly way. You can find the podcast at longboxcrusade.com. I hope you will join me on this crusade to read them all.
Aw, yeah. Aw, yeah. Feels good. Feels good.
Hello, greetings and hi there. This is the Hit Speaks Podcast. Hey there, true believers. Welcome to the Task Force X Headcast. G.I. Joe, the Real American Headcast, is the code name for Aaron's daring, highly trained headcast.
1980. Hello there, my name is Aaron Moss, and this is the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour. Did
you have to do... Hello, my name is Alexis Mox. This is my show called Alexis Speak.
And all of these shows can be found on the Headcast Network. Look for it on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Also on Facebook by looking for the Headcast Networks. All of the great headcasts that you love on one convenient feed. Look for it. The Headcast Network. See you there.
Now back to G.I. Joe.
And welcome back. So here we go with our next segment, which is Post Box of Pits. And we're going to start off with the tweeters, whatever you want to call it, over on Twitter. And we're going to have our guest, Kevin, read off those.
All right, Twitter. We've got Ange, we've got Captain Marvel, Chris Sheehan, Coffee and Comics Blog, FKA Jason, KSCGSF Podcast, Shazam Cast, The Hammer Strikes, and Trekker Talk.
And those are all people that's either retweeted or liked tweets related to the G.I. Joe World American Headcast. And over on Facebook, Mr. Daly, would you like to read off that list?
Facebook likes and shares came from Clinton Robinson, Coffee and Comics Blog, David A. Pascarella, Eric Best, Gord Tolton, Greg Combs, Joe Fishman, Kevin Thomas King, King Size Comics, Giant Size Fun, Matt Moreno, Mike Borschers, Ryan Daly, hey, that sounds familiar, Samuel Menjeres, and Scott Calhoun.
Very good. Also, we're on Facebook. Gord Tolton left a message. He says, this was my first ever issue of G.I. Joe, referred to issue number 9, and I recall it fondly, though realized later that it was kind of a fill-in issue, it had to do with more of an extended story. Still, I like the compact one does. Love the Clutch Scarlet back and forth. Scarlet, can you drive this? Clutch says, I drive anything on wheels. Great, we're on wings. Well, then it's iffy. I don't think we'll have enough of the sitcom manner in the series otherwise. As for Clutch's rifle in the sand pit, here's an unusual no prize that may or may not apply. Desert troops are routinely issued condoms to protect their gun barrels. Being 1982, I doubt that's something Marvel / Hasbro wanted to show. And this is me again. I commented on this. I went downhill from there, but that would have to be an awful large condom to cover that big gun. But, you know, maybe a magnum size? I don't know. And then we're on emails. We had an email from Pat Sampson. Pat writes, hello, Aaron. I found your podcast and website while I was searching the internet to see if anyone was doing a podcast on G.I. Joe, the Real American Hero comic book from Marvel. I've been thinking about doing a podcast myself around G.I. Joe by going through my collection and doing a recap on them. I have listened to your podcast on them and first would like to say nice work. As a child of the 80s, G.I. Joe has been an all-time favorite of mine in comic and TV form. Also enjoy Robotech. I'm only missing 10 issues from Marvel Run. I have everything from issue 20 to 155. And have of the later G.I. Joe comics from Dark Horse, Devil Dude, and IDW. And then from there, he asked if he could be a part of the stories. Pat would like to join us, and I replied back to him, told him eventually, yes, we'd like to get him on the show also. Pat ends the letter, keep up the good work, and now you know. And knowing is half the battle. Yo, Joe. So thank you for writing in, Pat. Yes, and me and Pat's exchanged a couple emails since then. Pat's gonna be starting his own podcast, which I played a promo for earlier. It's called the Long Box Crusade, where he's been back and looking through all his old comics and looking at them in sequential order from, chronological order from when he got purchased. So definitely check out Pat's show when he gets it going. Over on the blog, we have a comment from Warren Koopman, who left the post on issue 9, or episode 9. He says, just listen to the podcast. Great show as always. The art in the IDW Joe versus Transformer comic is not my cup of tea. Here I was thinking I was alone and not liking the art. That and the fact that Snake Eyes is speaking makes the series my least favorite Joe series. I did buy all the comics though. You have to support the local comic book store. And what can I say? I'm a Joe fan. So I could not buy it. Keep up the good work, guys. And yeah, we talked about that in the G.I. Joe versus Transformers that IDW is putting out currently. We talked about it last night. I really did not like the artwork. It threw me off. Kevin, have you seen that G.I. Joe versus Transformers comic that's currently out?
I avoided it like the plague. I have to be honest with you. I've never been a fan of the G.I. Joe Transformer crossovers. I love them as individual properties, but when they crossed over, it was... It's kind of like the scene in Time Cop where they can't touch each other or they both die type of thing. That's how I feel about the Transformers and G.I. Joe. Sorry, but I don't like the crossovers.
So I enjoyed the first one or two. But yeah, the artwork on this last one is, in my feeling, on the surface, atrocious. We talked about that in the last episode.
I remember the earlier crossovers. I remember not liking the cover art on the comics.
Oh, okay. And unless you guys have any other thoughts, I think that's going to wrap us up for today. Before we go, Kevin, again as the guest, why don't you tell everyone where they can find you on the internet?
Oh, great. Well, on Twitter, you can follow me at Spartan_Phoenix. And please check out our podcast under the Fandom Podcast Network. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podbean. My co-host and co-founders, Norman and Kyle, we co-host several shows on there covering all things nerdy, geeky. And recently, like I said, the G.I. Joe Fandom Flashback and Highlander. Just having a lot of fun over there. Check us out over there.
Thank you very much. And I say, I definitely recommend checking out Kevin's shows, especially the first one with Fandom, because I was on there, but that's another story entirely. And Ryan. Let's move on. Ryan, where can we find you at on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at RyanDaily01, and I am a member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, which can be found at fireandwaterpodcast.com. I've caught up a couple of podcasts over there, including the Secret Origins podcast, covering the 1980s DC Comics series Secret Origins, which Aaron has guested on from time to time.
I wasn't going to say anything. Yeah, I was. I was just on there.
Of course
there.
You were.
What was it, the week before last, I think it was?
Yeah.
Now, talking about Dr. Lights. It's always a pleasure to talk to Ryan, whether it's here on G.I. Joe or on Secret Origins. Secret Origins is a great podcast, not just because I've been on it a couple of times, but I love the Secret Origins comic book from the 80s. That was a great series. And Ryan, you and your, just, you know, not just but you and your guests are doing a fantastic job covering that series.
Thank you.
So, unless there's anything else, you guys, once again,
I just want to say thank you for having me on. It was a blast. I really have been enjoying your listening to it since episode one, and a big G.I. Joe fan. It's an honor to be on. Thank you.
Well, it was a pleasure having
Thank you, Kevin. It was great to have you.
So I'll keep you on file, because, you know, with my, it may come down to me and my weird recording schedule. It's hard for me to do it with my family until late at night, and me being on the West Coast, and most of my podcasting friends being on the left, on the East Coast. It's hard for us to sync up half the time, so I know Kyle's off doing family stuff today, and I think Adam, he's, again, working with Cobra Commander on some other devices to take over the world. Not sure what it is this time, but yeah, no, I'll definitely keep you in mind, Kevin. Yeah, if we definitely need someone, we'll definitely be reaching out to you.
Please do.
With you. You're a great co-host to have on the show. Your enthusiasm and your joy for the material shows through, so... Again, I wish to thank you very much for jumping in and filling in for this episode. I know it was last minute. Appreciate it. And Ryan, as always, you're a trooper. You're there for me all the time. I really appreciate you being on the show, man.
Whatever.
Pleasure. Okay, that's it. We're shagging the ass. Okay, I guess I'll do it for this time. So anyways, until next time, remember, guys, knowing is half the battle, and of course, G.I. Joe.
Yep. Yo, Joe.
Yo, Joe!
Oh, no! My kitten's lost!
I'll help you find her.
We don't have time to waste.
Blind does not mean you cannot see how to solve problems. Let's all look.
No luck.
Can't find her. You found Puppy!
I heard her meowing.
Mark has learned to use his other senses better. Remember, having a handicap
doesn't mean you're helpless. Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast, is available monthly on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Headspeaks.com. All characters and stories are owned and trademarked by their respective owners. We claim no ownership other than our opinions. All audio and images are used for entertainment purposes and falls under fair use. We make no money from this headcast. For more of the monthly G.I. Joe, check out the IDW series. For the stories we're covering, look for the comics and trade paperbacks. Let us know what you think. Send us an email letting us know your thoughts. Joe's dismissed.
I would love to see a reunion of the musicians that have done all the G.I. Joe theme songs perform at a G.I. Joe convention. How cool would that be?
Very cool.
That'd be awesome.
I would pay good money to see that live.
Yeah, that would be very interesting to see.